Welcome, and thank you all for standing by. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, we'll conduct the question-and-answer session. To ask a question, just press star followed by the number one. Today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this point. Now, I'll turn the meeting over to Ms. Amy Friedkin. Ma'am, you may now begin.
Thank you, JR, and good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Amy Friedkin, one of the organizers for today's call. Today's webcast is presented by the Illinois Department of Human Services, Division of Mental Health, and the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative. The title of today's webinar is Training for New Rule 132 Providers. Before we begin the formal presentation, I would like to review with everyone a few helpful housekeeping items. If you happen to get disconnected from the audio portion, please call back into the same number you just dialed, which is 888-469-1932, and the participant passcode is 1658365. The visual portion of this presentation is web-based. Of course, you can choose the audio portion only, but if you would like to see the webinar PowerPoint presentation, the logon information is located on the invite you received after you registered. If you are experiencing any problems with that particular link to join, you can also go to www.joinwebinar.com and enter the webinar ID directly, which is 153-423-755. I will now turn the call over to Rich Jones, DMH Provider Access Specialist. Rich, you may begin.
Thank you, Amy. Welcome, everyone. On behalf of the Department of Human Services and the Division of Mental Health, I'd like to welcome you to today's presentation. As you recall, we have covered Rule 132 in an earlier webinar, and now today we will focus on claiming and getting ready to claim and how to actually do registrations, service authorizations, and utilization review, and we look forward to providing the information that you will need to actually submit Type 36 mental health Medicaid claims for the Division of Mental Health. So let me just start off with the beginning process of submitting claims. Doug Woods has joined me here. He's our Systems Development Information Manager. He's going to take over in a minute. I'm going to just start off our presentation just kind of doing a wrap-up of all of the requirements that you need to have successful billing. As we started at the beginning when you were certified to be a Rule 132 Medicaid provider, we did the impact enrollment, and then we did the collaborative enrollment. And once that was completed, now you're ready to move on to the next phase, which is to register individuals for services, determine their Medicaid eligibility, utilize the Provider Connect system for registration, obtain the recipient identification number, as well as verify the Social Service Package B, submit registrations, see if the registrations have been accepted, and then, if needed, to do a request for a service authorization. And then we'll talk a little bit about timely claims, submitting claims, the Community Mental Health Service Definition and Reimbursement Guide, and we'll have a time for questions and answers at the very end of the day. So let me go a little bit at the top again. Every agency that does Medicaid billing, as you are aware, needs to have an active Rule 132 certificate, either issued by the Bureau of Accreditation, Licensing, and Certification or by the Department of Children and Family Services. That certificate must list that agency, what specific Rule 132 services they are certified in, as well as the certified site locations. The agency also needs to enroll each certified site location with a unique MPI number so that they can obtain from HFS a legacy type 36 Medicaid ID number. Once that is active, then you can enroll with the collaborative and get access to the Provider Connect system and start working towards getting registrations. Finally, the other final step with the provider enrollment is that DMH will issue you an approval that you can actually start submitting and processing claims. So that's just kind of a summary of where I believe every provider that's on the call, we've already accomplished those steps, or we're real close to accomplishing them. So now we go, what do we do from here? How do we actually submit claims? And I'm going to turn the next part of this. Oh, I'm going to flip the slide. I skipped the slide, sorry. I want to back up again before I turn it over. In the future, if you have any changes to your locations, or if you're closing a site, moving the site, you have a new director, anything that changes the data system, we ask that you get that approved or communicate that to the regional office. And then you have to communicate that to BALC or DCFS so that the sites are then corrected and your certificate is modified. And then you'll need to modify your HFS enrollment as well as your Provider Connect enrollment, and all of these data systems will need to be synchronized for successful processing of claims. And now we can turn it over to Doug for how to start going from this step forward.
Okay, so some of the steps for registering consumers is that we need to make sure that we have Medicaid eligibility. That has to be one of the foremost things that have to be done in order to actually claim for Medicaid for services that were rendered. Rule 132 providers are responsible for determining that eligibility, and you can use the HFS MEDI system to check the status. All the individuals must meet the DMH eligibility criteria for submitting particular types of service. They must be registered with the collaborative system, also known as Provider Connect. Some of the things that they have to have in order to be registered is an active recipient identification number, and they have to have Social Service Package B. RINs, if somebody comes in and does not have a RIN, they're requested through the eRIN system, which stands for Electronic Recipient Identification Number. The provider must have a DHS ID for that system. There is a form that needs to be sent through DMH, which is then processed by our security department. All that information is handled through this link that's provided on this slide. Eligibility for Social Service Package B needs to be confirmed. If a RIN is newly assigned, you want to wait at least 48 hours before submitting a registration so that that information can be put on the HFS eligibility file. The initial registration must be accepted by the collaborative before any claims can be submitted. So to submit registrations and for the acceptance process of those submissions, there's two different ways. One is a batch file. There is a response report that is provided that shows errors or the acceptance of each one of the records within the file. Direct data entry. Of course, through direct data entry, there's an immediate acceptance upon submission of that registration. You manage your registrations through through Provider Connect. They have to have, in order for the claim to be accepted, there has to be a registration on file. If you try to submit a claim without one, that claim will be rejected. A big item of note is that through the registration process, all individuals must be re-registered every 6 months. And there's a core list of fields that we need to make sure that gets updated for every re-registration. There's also a request for service authorizations for team services, currently for ACT and CST, and that's for authorizations and reauthorizations of both of those service types. Claims for DMH services are submitted directly to HFS through the HFS Medi system. They have a portal in which you can do direct data entry of claims or submission of batch files, just like you do with registrations. You can submit a claim within 180 days of the original date of service. And claims are submitted using the standard 837P format. For additional information on the service definitions, there's a service definition reimbursement guide. It's located on the HFS website, and it's on this link provided. So the way it handles it, HFS transmits daily eligibility files to the collaborative. This allows us to know whether or not somebody has the Social Service Package B. It also will also provide the REN. That information is then synchronized so that when you do your registration, you know that those items are on file. And then, of course, that information is also used to process the claims. Once you do submit claims, there is a claims remittance that is sent. It is provided through the HFS Medi system. If you do a batch enrollment, it's returned on an 835 remittance form. That form can either be viewed through the Medi system, and I believe it's also mailed to a specific location noted in the impact system. So you can, through this remittance, you can it'll know what claims have been approved and if claims have been rejected. If so, you would make those corrections as soon as possible and resubmit where applicable. Any questions regarding claim submission goes to directly to HFS. And all these numbers that are listed are obviously provided in the PowerPoint slides, and the resources are all listed on the last two or three pages of this slide. Technical claim submission information goes to the HFS EDI Help Desk. Provider Connect registration goes to the Collaborative's EDI Help Desk, which is, as noted there, is a different number. Service authorization for team services is listed through the Collaborative. And then there is a reporting environment provided by the Collaborative called Intelligence Connect. Any issues with that are through the Collaborative's EDI Help Desk as well. RIN issues and Social Service Package B are can be directed to DHS Customer Support, Jay Hidalgo, and his direct number is listed on here. And then we've re-provided the links to the service matrix that's provided on our Collaborative website, as well as the service definition reimbursement guide that's provided through HFS. We've also provided a list of the contact information for all of our regional executive directors. These are the people that we need to contact for changes in your provider information, as Rich mentioned earlier.
And Amy, that concludes our portion. So if you'd like to take control now.
Thank you, Doug. Give me one moment to get that switched over. All right, I will start by giving you an overview of Provider Connect. Provider Connect is a free online secure application It is a portal into the collaborative MIS system and is accessed via the collaborative's website, which is www.IllinoisMentalHealthCollaborative.com. That is all one word, no abbreviations. Today we will review how to access Provider Connect, how to register, re-register, and close a consumer's case, and what resources are available. There are several tools available within Provider Connect, and these include the ability to register a consumer, view consumer registration status, and close a registration. You may also view authorizations, view and print authorization letters, access and print forms, and submit inquiries to customer service. There are several benefits to using Provider Connect. You can access routine information 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Provider Connect is accessed, again, through that website, www.IllinoisMentalHealthCollaborative.com. It allows for multiple transactions to be completed in one session, and information may be viewed and printed, and this limits routine calls for information needed. In order to access Provider Connect, you must be enrolled with the collaborative HFS, and you must have a provider ID number assigned by Beacon Health Options. To obtain a provider ID number, you need to contact National Networks at 800-397-1630. Each provider is allowed one Provider Connect logon ID. If more than one ID is needed, you will need to contact Beacon Health Options EDI Help Desk at 888-247-9311, and you will press Option 3. The help desk is available 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Standard Time, and please note that there is a 48-hour turnaround when requesting additional logons. Before you can access Provider Connect, you must register as a user by taking the following steps. You will go to the collaborative website and click on For Providers. This will bring up the Provider Online Services page. You will then click Register, and you will be taken to the Provider Online Services registration page. You will complete all applicable fields, and please note that all fields with a red asterisk are required fields. Please keep the following requirements in mind when creating your password. Passwords must be 8 to 20 characters in length, must contain one number, 0 to 9, contain one uppercase letter, A through Z, and contain one of the special characters shown here. And it must also have no spaces. Also, please note that passwords are case sensitive and will expire every 90 days. This screen shows what the Provider Online Services screen looks like. This is where you will register for a password and log in to Provider Connect. Registering consumers is important as the information submitted during registration is used for enrollment of individuals for DMH purchase services, to determine the eligibility group for which the consumer is qualified, which in turn determines what services DHS and DMH will reimburse. To obtain a consumer RIN, Recipient Identification Number, and DHS Social Services from HFS, you must visit the eRIN system that Doug mentioned earlier. The link is provided here for you. Registration information will be updated within 5 business days. Beacon processes the registration and assigns funds, and then Beacon sends the fund information to HFS within 1 business day. And then HFS will accept or reject and send the results to Beacon by the 2nd business day. There are several scenarios where you will need to access the registration screens. When registering a new consumer, when registering a new consumer and closing from services at the same time, An example of this would be used when a consumer came in for a crisis service and did not continue in services. When registering a consumer who has been previously closed, when registering a consumer which is required every 6 months to maintain eligibility for submission of claims, and finally, when closing a consumer, when closing a registration of a consumer. Before we begin the live demo, I will show you two methods for accessing the registration screens, and they include the specific consumer search and register a consumer without first searching for a member. The collaborative highly recommends that you use the specific consumer search option for the following reasons. This option verifies that the consumer is on file with the collaborative, and when you navigate to the register screen after searching for the consumer, the demographic fields will have been pre-populated for you. Choosing the register a consumer link without first searching for a consumer will require all consumer demographic information to be entered before the system can determine if the consumer is on file. So before we begin the live demo to register a consumer, I'd like to point you to the Provider Connect registration guide dated June of 2013. This is available on the collaborative's website. You will just click for providers, and then provider information link will be on your left. Then the document can be found in the registration section. Or you can access the guide directly using the web address shown here. Provider Connect guide provides an overview of the registration process and a detailed description of information required to complete the registration process. So now we will go to the live demo. Give me one moment to get that pulled up. This is a Provider Connect login screen that appears when you select login from the Provider Online Services page of the collaborative website. And before I log in, I'd like to point out the contact information down here below the register button for new users. This is the number you'd use for any assistance with any Provider Connect access issue. That number is 888-247-9311. And please note the business hours are Eastern Standard Time. So let's begin by putting in our user ID and our password. All right. This is the Provider Connect user agreement. You will read through this and click I agree. This pop-up button will come up. It's okay to just click OK there. All right, and from your provider homepage, you will see links to the left and under your message center. The links to the left include options for specific member search, and right below that, register member. And as I previously mentioned, the collaborative highly recommends that you use the specific member search rather than the register a member. These two options are also located under your message center here, under what would you like to do today. Today we are going to click on find a specific member. You're going to enter your consumer ID. And I'm just using test data information for today, but please note the format for the date of birth. That is important. And then we're going to click search. There may be a lag in between the screens a little bit, but bear with me. All right, this brings up the consumer demographics screen. You will see four other tabs at the top that you can reference at a later date. They include the enrollment history, COB, benefits, and additional information. To begin the registration process, you're going to click the View Consumer Registration tab button here. And as you will see, we'll get a message that says no records found. So if no existing registrations are found for the agency, a no records found message will display in the consumer registration list. You simply need to click on this tab here for Add Consumer Registration. Now, please note the following. As you can see, some of the demographic fields, if this person had been previously registered, they will fill in. Some of them have been filled in for us already. That is because we search for a member prior to registering. So these fields pre-populated, and they can be overwritten as needed. So all fields with an asterisk are required and must be populated. If you try to move on to the next screen without completing a required field, the field heading will turn red and an error message will display at the top of the screen. And I will demonstrate that now for you. As you can see, it lists them here and highlights them in red on the page. So I will quickly complete these required fields with test data. I do want to mention here for race that once you have indicated a race, the rest of the fields do need to be filled completed, but you can select 98, which is nothing to report. Trying to get through this as quickly as I can, so bear with me. I do want to mention here about the special program. The Region 1 Crisis Care System, this is the CHIPS program, and the CHP is the Community Health and Prevention. So I just wanted to make that distinction between the two. Sometimes those get confused. For the MH closing, information is gathered when closing a registration, and since we are not closing a registration today, I will leave that blank. I do want to mention here that you have two options. You can click cancel, but in doing so, none of the information entered on the registration will be retained, so you will need to click the next button to go to the next page of the registration process, and this will bring up the select funds. On the select fund screen, the system will automatically default to the eligible funding sources, as shown here, and click Next. The selected funding sources screen will display with an effective and expiration date. So please note at this point, it is not guaranteed that the consumer will be registered for any or all of these funds. At the very end of the registration process, you will be informed if the registration has been approved and the exact funds that have been assigned to that consumer. We're going to click Continue. This is the diagnosis page, and this first section is the behavioral or mental health diagnosis section, which allows you to report five separate mental health diagnoses, with the first diagnosis being the principal. Here you can see the three separate fields that make up the diagnoses. We have the category, the code, and the description. Just to show you some of the functionality on this screen, I have the category, the diagnosis code, and the description, and I can begin typing the diagnosis code. So if I just begin to type, let's just select F and click the hyperlink here. You can see the list of codes have filtered down to only those codes beginning with an F right here. So I can either select the code from the list, and in doing so, it will automatically populate the category and description. I'll show you that. So it automatically filled those in for me. So I can, you can do it that way, or you can start from the category and select from there. So if I select anxiety disorder, then click on the hyperlink, it'll bring up all the codes and descriptions under anxiety disorder. And then you can also do it from the description. So if I started to type, or if I typed in bipolar and click the hyperlink, it is going to bring up all the codes and descriptions under everything with bipolar in it. So for today, I'm going to use this code, F4110. Click the link, and then it fills in the category and description. Let's see. In the primary medical diagnosis, the functionality works the same, but you are only required to select a primary medical diagnosis for Category 1. So as you can see, the asterisk is there. So you would just select from that code. And it automatically populates the description. The social elements impacting diagnosis section is new to the registration workflow, but it is being reserved for future use. So for now, Provider Connect will systematically pre-fill the none checkbox on all Illinois consumer registrations. The functional assessment section is also new to the registration workflow, and it is also being reserved for future use. So for the time being, providers should skip this section and report GAF and CGAF scores on the functional impairment and assessment score tab of the consumer registration, which is the next step in the registration workflow. The first presentation assessments here, all three fields are required. Complete those and click next. And here is where you will enter the GAF and CGAF scores. Quickly run through these. Right. And then this is where you will fill in any locus results that you may have. And then we will click next. Oh, I missed one. Delete that and click next. This is the history of illness section, and you will just complete these fields as required. And click next. And this is the MH cross disabilities section, so you would enter the required field here. And click Next. And this is where you will enter any guardian information if you have it. Click Next. Sorry about the delay. All right, and here you can see the consumer registration confirmation screen will display a status of approved. You have successfully registered for the funding sources listed on this screen, and the funding sources listed will only be for Medicaid. So from here, I'm going to click the return button to go back to the consumer demographic screen. And this link here, the View Funding Source Enrollment Details, is where you can see all the funding sources the consumer is registered for. So let me show you that. They're all listed here. They all have an effective and expiration date. Go back home. And I do want to mention that all the registration screens, all of the slides that I have shown today, the presentation, will be posted on the collaborative website within the next few days, and the MP3 recording will also be there. The PowerPoint presentation will be under four providers and then provider information, and it'll be under the training or the heading training, and then the MP3 will be under the heading provider resources. So you can access that at a later date. But this time, we're going to go back home. And I am going to show you how to re-register a member. So again, we're going to click on the Find the Specific Member. Enter the consumer ID and date of birth. And click Search. And we are going to click on View Consumer Registration. And you can see that all the information that we just created is right here. And you will see a tab that says Re-Register, Close Registration, or Address Change. So you would just click re-register here. And you will go through the same process that I just showed you for registration. You will need to, any of the records where the re-registration button tab appears can be selected, and you'll need to re-register all funds. So you'll need to click on the applicable re-register button because there is a consumer registration record for each fund from which the consumer is registered that you will need to re-register them for. Go back. And again, some of those fields will be pre-populated for you. You just need to update them as needed, and remember that everything with an asterisk is required. And you will need to enter the registration start date, which is how we calculate the 6-month registration period. All right, now I will show you where you will find the close a registration button. It's right next to the re-register. So you will click the close registration. Now, you will use this like to end date a special program. This will end the selected, the special program only. The consumer will still be registered for all other registration funds. You can also use this to close a registration when both end date, to both end date a special program and close the registration. So this will end the special program on the end date specified and close the other registered funds on the closing date. If the special program is being ended on the same date that the registration is being closed, then both can be closed or entered by entering the MH closing date below the special programs, which I showed you earlier. It is important that the consumer status be updated when he or she is no longer enrolled in special programs or when the consumer is no longer being seen for services. Let me get out of here. As I said before, all the slides of the presentation that I just did will be included. I just want to point out something else real quick. I apologize. I want to point out the customer service telephone numbers that can be used. This contact list is posted in the spotlight on the collaborative website, and you can access that there, or you will also have them in the provider's, the slides of this. So finally, I just want to discuss the multiple RIN resolution. You'll need to call the collaborative at 866-359-7953. Select the provider menu and then press 1. A collaborative eligibility specialist will work with DMH, and DMH directs the collaborative to keep or merge each RIN. And then how to handle a consumer name and date of birth change. The consumer's name and date of birth that the collaborative has on file is received from HFS. So if the consumer's name or date of birth is incorrect, the correction needs to be made with HFS. HFS will then notify the collaborative through the eligibility file we get from them daily. That will conclude my presentation, and I will now turn it over to Trish Gorda, who will cover batch registration.
Thank you, Amy. So during this portion of the training, I'm going to review what's needed to submit batch registrations, and then I'll walk you through the screens to submit a batch registration file. To have a complete understanding of everything you'll need to know to successfully submit batch registration files, you'll need to refer to the batch registration submission guide on the collaborative website. In the guide, you'll find information on obtaining a submitter ID and password, file specifications required for your batch file, such as the file type and the length, and trailer record requirements, the batch file layout showing field names and descriptions, as well as field lengths and positions, information on error processing, such as error codes and descriptions, and appendices listing the Illinois DSM-5 mental health and medical diagnosis categories, codes, and descriptions. So in the last demo, Amy showed you how to register an individual consumer using the online registration screens in Provider Connect. In this portion of the training, I'll show you how to submit multiple registration records on a specially formatted batch file using the batch registration submission process, which is also accessible in Provider Connect. Before I begin, I just wanted to show you where you can find the batch registration submission guide on the provider information page of the collaborative website using the link shown here. So now we'll walk through the batch registration submission process in Provider Connect. From the Provider Connect homepage, you're going to select EDI homepage option on the left-hand side of the screen. From the EDI homepage, you can submit a new batch file. You can see the batch files you've previously submitted, and you can retrieve your response files. We'll get to response files in more detail in a few moments, but for now, we'll continue with submitting a batch file and select the Submit Batch File button. In step one of the process, you're going to select Batch Reg from the Form Type drop-down field and then click the Next button. Step two of the process is not used by Illinois providers, so you'll just click the Next button here. Step three of the process is where you'll upload your batch file. So you'll click the Browse button and locate and attach your file, and then click the Submit button. In step four of the process, you'll get a message that your batch file was submitted successfully and that you'll receive an email shortly containing the submission number. You'll need to make note of this submission number because that's how you'll identify your response files. So now that your batch file has been submitted, it still needs to pass several file validation checks. If any one of these validation checks fail, your batch file will be checked. So just to be clear, these file validation checks pertain to the formatting of the file itself, not the individual registration records on the file. So just because you see this screen saying that the file was submitted successfully, it doesn't mean that your batch file was accepted. And the only way you're going to know if your batch file was accepted is by downloading and viewing the summary response file coinciding with your submission number. If the summary file shows that the batch file was rejected, you'll need to correct the batch file and resubmit. So there are several reasons why your batch file may have rejected. First, if the batch file is not formatted correctly, the error message on the summary response file will be invalid file format. Or there may be issues with the trailer record on the file. Some examples of that would be if the trailer record does not exist, then the error message will be no trailer record. Or if the trailer record field containing the number of records on the batch file is not a numeric value, then the error message would indicate total number of records not numeric. And then if the record number on the trailer does not equal the number of registration records on the file, that error message would indicate total number of records not equal to the trailer record. And as I mentioned earlier, successful batch submission depends on meeting these file specifications and batch file layout found in that batch registration submission guide. So assuming that your batch file passes the file validation checks and is accepted, I'll now cover the other types of response files you could receive. So besides the summary response file, you can receive up to two additional response files for each batch file submitted. Of course, you'll always receive the summary response file, which is going to indicate whether your batch file was accepted or rejected. If your batch file was rejected, this is the only response file you'll receive. As I mentioned earlier, you'll be able to see the reason the file rejected when you download and view the summary response file. If the batch file was accepted, the summary response file will indicate the number of registration records accepted and the number of registration records that rejected. If there were registration records that accepted, you're also going to receive an accepted response file. You won't receive this accepted response file if none of the registration records on your batch file were accepted, only if you had accepted registrations. If there were registration records that rejected, and here I just want to note that I'm not referring to the formatting of the batch file itself here, but the actual registration records. If you had any registration records that rejected, you're also going to receive an error response file. If you didn't have any registrations on your file that rejected, then you're not going to receive an error response file. So, I mean, you could have a mix of both accepted and rejected. So if some of your registration records were accepted and some of them were rejected, you're going to receive a total of three response files: the summary response file, the accepted response file, and the error response file. It is absolutely critical that you download these response files as soon as you receive them to ensure that any rejected batch files or registration records are corrected as soon as possible and resubmitted. So now to retrieve your response files, we need to return to the EDI homepage. You'll find your response files in the incoming files section. Our example here shows three files that all contain the same batch submission number. Each of those file names ends with a different letter. The summary response file name ends with an R. The accepted response file name ends with an A, and the error response file name ends with an E. The first file you'll want to download is the summary response file, which again is going to tell you if your batch file was accepted or rejected. So you'll just click the hyperlinked file name to download it. And on the next screen, you'll again click that file name to continue the download process. So if the response file downloaded successfully, you can click the Yes button, and you'll return to the EDI homepage in case you have more response files to download. If the response file did not download successfully, you can click the No button, and you can try to download the response file again using EDI, or you can try downloading the file directly to your computer by right-clicking on the file name and selecting Save As. And of course, if you need assistance submitting your batch file, you can contact the EDI Help Desk at the number shown here. So now that completes my presentation. I'm going to turn the call over to our clinical team to continue the presentation.
Thanks, Trish. This is Amy. Give me one moment to get that pulled up. Patricia, you may now begin.
Good afternoon. My name is Lauren Kelbis. I am a clinical care manager from the Collaborative, and in this presentation, we will be going through the process of submitting utilization management requests for services through the use of Provider Connect. I will be discussing the ACT and CST, the Assertive Community Treatment and Community Support Team. To start with, we'll be going through the submission process. a provider may submit an ACT or CST authorization request using either of the following methods. You can either submit online at the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative website or submit it via fax at 866-928-7177. DHS and DMH require the collaborative to respond to requests for authorizations within either one business day from the receipt of a complete initial authorization request, excluding holidays and weekends, or 3 business days for a complete reauthorization request, excluding the holidays and weekends. Going over the initial authorization request, to request the authorization for consumer who is not currently receiving the ACT or CST, the treating provider will submit a complete request for authorization of these services. You will need the ACT authorization request form, including the LOCUS information for adults, or the CST authorization request form that includes the LOCUS for adults 18 and over, or the Ohio scale result for children from 5 to 17. An initial treatment plan with the ACT-CST listed as the service, the consumer's initial crisis plan, and a mental health assessment. Once the initial ACT request is submitted, the documents will be reviewed for adherence to the clinical criteria based on the service definition, Rule 132, and the authorization treatment guidelines. If the clinical criteria is met for services, the collaborative will enter an initial authorization for 90 days of service. If only a mental health assessment is submitted at the time of the initial request, if the treatment plan is submitted, the clinician may enter an authorization for 12 months. Once the initial CST request is submitted, the documents will be reviewed for the adherence to the clinical criteria based on the service definition 132 and the authorization treatment guidelines. If the clinical criteria is met for services, the collaborative will enter the initial authorization of 90 days of services with the mental health assessment. And if it's with the treatment plan, it will be for the full 6 months. If the consumer continues to need these services, the team must submit a reauthorization request before the initial authorization expires. This request may be submitted 14 calendar days in advance of the expiration dates. Going over reauthorization requests, the request for a consumer who is currently receiving the ACT or CST services, the treating provider will submit a complete request for the authorization of the ACT-CST packet that includes the following. The authorization request form that includes the LOCUS information for adults. If the CST authorization request for a child between 5 and 17, the form should also include the Ohio scale results. An updated ACT or CST treatment plan that is in within the last 6 months, and the consumer's crisis plan that is within the last year. To continue on with those requirements, once the request for the reauthorization of ACT services is submitted, the documents will be reviewed for the adherence to the clinical criteria based on the service definition 132 and the authorization treatment guidelines. If the clinical criteria is met for these services, the collaborative will enter an authorization for either 9 months or 12-month period. Again, the same with the CST. Once the documents are submitted, they will be reviewed for the adherence to the clinical criteria based on the service definition 132 and the authorization treatment guidelines. If the clinical criteria is met for the services, the collaborative will enter the authorization for 180-day period. Before the reauthorization expires, the team can submit the reauthorization request for the consumer if they need to continue on with those services. Then they can request submit it 14 calendar days in advance of the authorization expiration dates. The next few slides, this is the ACT request authorization form. And the next is the CST request authorization form. And now I'm going to turn it over to Patricia Hill.
Good afternoon. I'm going to show you how to step through Provider Connect and enter the actual authorization. First, we'll begin by going to the collaborative website for providers and log into Provider Connect by selecting login. once you reach your home page, there's two locations where you can actually enter in an authorization request. If you notice, there's off to the left, there's a listing, and then in the middle section of your home page, you'll also see where you can enter an authorization request. Once you enter that, you'll get a brief disclaimer. Once you hit next, it'll take you to the member search landing page. Here you can enter as much information as you have available, but the two required fields would be the consumer ID, which is the recipient ID number, and then date of birth. This will take you to the member demographics page. There you can verify, make sure that you have, in fact, the correct consumer. Once you have selected that, it will take you to the provider location page. And here there'll be a listing of the different agencies. Of course, you will select the one that pertains to your agency. Once you have selected that, it will land you on the request services header. Here you would put in the requested start date, the level of service, the type of service, and then the level of care that you're trying to enter your request for. Also on this page, you can attach documents, if you have those at this time, which will be your mental health assessment, treatment plan, any crisis plan, or your ACT actual request form, or any clinical documentation that you'd like to submit at this time. Once you select next, it will take you to the service where you can enter in your clinical staff contact information. And it would be good to make sure that you fill out this section. Required is the case manager's name and phone number. It would be nice to also just include the fax and the email address as well, because sometimes we do correspondence via email, secure encrypted email. Once you finish that section, it will take you to the service definition criteria. Here, we'd like for you to check all that apply in this section. Next are the behavioral and medical diagnosis sections. Here, you will have to check at least one primary behavioral diagnosis, which would be the main diagnosis. And on the next screen here, if you notice, there are drop-down menus under the category. So you could do it three different ways. You can select your category and then go through the diagnostic categories and select a diagnosis code, or you can go through a description, or if you know the diagnosis code from the DSM-5, ICD-10 codes, you can enter that and the screens will pre-fill. Here we just took and entered a generic code. This shows you a brief description of some of the codes for the DSM-5. I believe for this example we're using F31.11, which is the bipolar and related disorders. And here you see that it pre-populated on the screen. You have at least four more categories that for additional behavioral health diagnosis if you need to enter or use those, which are shown in the next slides. Also, you would need to select a primary medical diagnosis. Now, we know sometimes you may not know that immediately, and therefore you can select none or unknown. And the screen before that was just showing you some of the medical diagnosis codes. Again, you can select none or unknown, and it will pre-populate. The description or the diagnosis code section will remain blank. That's okay. Then you will land on the social elements impacting diagnoses screen. Normally, it's checked none if you did not fill this screen out during registration. So if you see that, you want to uncheck the none button and go ahead and check as many as apply. Here is a functional assessment where you will fill out your GAF score.
And I do want to emphasize that for the ACT and CST services, a GAF score needs to be entered.
The next portion would be our LOCUS results. You will fill this section out. Notice it says if the LOCUS score is under level 4, you must enter a reason for deviation in the narrative entry box. If you have all of your medications, you can at this time list them under the psychotropic medication section. Once you have finished entering all of the information for your consumer, you'll land on the determination status page. And for the particular authorizations you're requesting, the status will say pending, pending the clinical review of the information. And here it shows the printing options. You can either print the page that you're looking at. You can also print the authorization request. You can download the authorization request, and then the others to return you to provider home.
Next, I'll be discussing discontinuation process for ACT and CST services. Providers must notify the collaborative when a consumer is discontinuing a CST or ACT or CST service by completing a notification of discontinuation of those services. The form can be either found outlined in the Service Authorization Protocol Manual located on the collaborative website listed below. Detailed information regarding the discontinuation of these services and linkage to other services must be documented in the consumer's clinical record. This is an example of the ACT Notice of Discontinuation. And the next is the CST. If the consumer does not have Medicaid, you will receive a call from a clinician that is processing your request for services, informing you that your request has been administratively denied due to the consumer not having Medicaid enrolled in our system. At this time, you will be instructed to resubmit the request with a Medicaid-eligible RIM. If the consumer is Medicaid eligible and it is not reflected in our system, you will be asked to submit verification documents to show verification of Medicaid eligibility. Our clinical department will forward this information to our eligibility department to be researched. If the consumer is determined to be eligible, the records will be updated in our system, allowing the authorization request to be completed. Next, we'll be going over the request for reconsideration and appeals. Prior to a denial, the collaborative staff will submit consumers and providers by offering alternative services that can meet the consumer's needs in the least restrictive setting. Appeals can be requested by a provider on behalf of consumer by calling the collaborative at 866-359-7953. Reconsideration requests must be received within 30 days of receipt of the denial. Reconsideration request will be then reviewed by a psychiatrist employed by the collaborative who is not involved in the original decision and is not a permanent of the psychiatrist who made the original decision. If the provider, consumer, or designated representative disagrees with the outcome of the reconsideration request, an appeal may be filed within 5 days from the decision date of the reconsideration request. This review shall not be a clinical review, but rather an administrative review to ensure that all applicable appeal procedures have been correctly applied and followed. The final administrative decision shall be subject to judicial review exclusively as provided in the administrative review law.
Some helpful resources. ACT and CST forms can be found on the collaborative website under the provider information link in the clinical/utilization management section. There you can, of course, find the authorization request form as well as the notice of discontinuation form. You can also find the diagnosis appendix in the batch registration submission guide, which is located on the collaborative website under provider information link in the registration section, which was shown to you during the batch registration demonstration. The following screenshots will just show a quick snapshot of the following appendix, Appendix A and Appendix B, one for the mental health diagnostic categories and one for the medical diagnostic categories. If you're having technical issues, you can always contact the EDI Help Desk at the number 888-247-9311. They're available Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. And some examples of technical issues would be account disabled, you forgot your password, the system happens to be freezing or crashing, system unavailable due to system errors, or just general registration errors or questions that you may have. Amy, I'm going to turn it back over to you.
Thanks, Patricia. At this time, we can open up the line for questions.
Certainly. We will now begin the question and answer session. Participants, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number one. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. Your name is required to introduce your question, and to cancel your request, you may press star followed by the number two. Once again, participants, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star followed by the number one. One moment, please, for our first question. And our first question comes from the line of Michelle.
Good afternoon. I have a question regarding registration and the date that it becomes eligible, and actually if services were provided before that the registration approval date. What do we do in a case like that? Hello? I'm sorry? You're breaking up really, really bad. Hello?
Yes, it seems that we're having some difficulty with the line.
Okay.
Michelle, what agency are you from?
Psych Synergy Psychological Services.
New Psychological Center. Okay. Do you have a phone number where we can get back to you?
Sure. Yes. I'm 708-566-4950.
I'm going to read that back to you. 708-566-4950?
That's correct.
Okay. Sorry about that. We seem to be having some technical difficulties.
Okay.
Do we have any other questions, JR?
Yes, we have next question comes from the line of Alejandro.
Hi, good afternoon. So I have a question on when we are trying to open a participant to ACT services, we still get registration errors saying that the participant is still under the Williams or Culvert decree. But these are also participants that might have currently a non-Medicaid status. How can we resolve those issues? Hello?
One moment. JR, are you able to check with Doug or Rich? Is it their line that is having issues?
Let me just check. One moment, please. One moment, still checking. Hello, Ms. Freaky.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, right. It seems that Mr. Jones's line is having issues. The line is coming in and out. So what I advise is they could just try to call back again.
They're going to try to call back?
Yes.
Okay, we'll wait just a few minutes then.
All right. So, Mr. Jones? Please try to call back.
This is Alejandro again. Did you guys hear my question?
Could you repeat the question, please?
Sure. So I'm Alejandro from Heartland Health Outreach. We are still receiving registration error messages stating that a participant's registration might not have been accepted due to Williams consumer status. We want to know how can we close those participants to the such programs like Williams or Culver Decree programs.
This is Trish Gorda. Okay, so if I understand you correctly, you're attempting to register a consumer and the registration is wanting you to select Williams when the consumer is not a Williams consumer. Is that correct?
Well, that might be one issue, or just the issue might be the registration is rejected because we are trying to open a participant to ACT services, but the participant is still registered as a Williams or Culver Decree consumer in Provider Connect, I believe.
Okay, so the consumer is already registered. You're not attempting to register a consumer, but the consumer is already registered?
Correct.
And they're registered for the Williams class consent decree, is that correct?
Correct.
And then you're attempting to request ACT services for that consumer and getting errors with the request for service? Is that what I'm understanding?
Correct. Either that or when we are trying to submit the registration included in the batch file, the results that we get on that registration says that the participant is still open to Williams or Culver Decrees.
Okay, well, if you're talking about registering and having issues with the registration because the consumer still has the Williams class consumer eligibility, then we would just need to work with our eligibility team here at Beacon to expire that Williams eligibility so that the consumer could be registered for funds other than Williams.
Okay. How do we go about that?
What you would do is you would call the EDI help desk, and they can assist you with that and get you to the right areas.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question.
JR, can I see if Rich is on the line?
All right. Okay, one moment, please. Mr. Jones and Mr. Woods are still not yet on the line. Wait, one moment. Would you like to, we have a question on queue. Would you like to answer the questions?
Sure, we can move forward.
And I've noticed that I follow all the steps properly. I upload, I download, I do everything exactly the way it says. But I've noticed that there are times when a clinician will go.
One moment. We have a question on queue now coming from the line of Maribel. Your line is now open, Maribel.
Hi, this is Maribel from Association House. Okay, my question is, first, what I have noticed. I do everything exactly how it was shown previously. And what it is that when the supervisors go in to do an authorization request for a client, they, in turn, as soon as they put in their first initial information, it'll turn around and say that the client's not registered through the collaborative, but yet I have an approval. Why does that happen, and how can I fix that?
Hi, Maribel. This is Trish Gorda again. Okay, so when you say you have an approval, that means that
I downloaded an approval.
An approved registration for that consumer?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So you're requesting services for this consumer and you have an approved registration. I know that dates are important when you're requesting authorizations, that the request for services, those request dates need to be within the registration period. Mm-hmm. More details about the registration and the requests that the services that you're requesting?
Well, the first time that I had experienced it was with a CST client. And it was exactly as I stated before. I submitted the registration request. I uploaded the results into our computer system. I turned around and I told her, okay, go ahead and you can request the authorization. And when she did the initial information, as soon as she did that portion of it, it came back stating that the client wasn't registered in the collaborative.
Okay. Okay. So without, you know, looking at that registration myself, what I'm going to recommend is that you do contact the EDI help desk, and they can get you to the proper area or answer some questions regarding the registration in our system.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. As of this time, we have no questions on queue. Excuse me, Ms. Freaky.
Yes, thank you. JR, did Rich Jones, was he ever able to get back in?
Actually, their line is connected. However, they're not responding.
Okay. All right. And we have no further questions at this time?
Right now, there are no further questions on queue. I'm sorry. Excuse me. We have a question on queue coming from Darlene Perry. Your line is now open.
Yes, I just wanted to get some clarity. I'm calling from the Forensic Center. I wanted some clarity just in terms of what is actually billable, only because at the Forensic Center we get court-ordered evaluations to conduct for those individuals who are on Medicaid. And the court is only asking for the evaluation to determine what type of treatment services would be appropriate. And I wasn't sure if we could actually bill through Medicaid for that service.
Hi, Darlene. This is Trish Gorda again. Can we get your number and give you a call about that?
Sure. You want me now? The number is area code 312-467-8610.
And your question was regarding billing for services?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We'll take a note and we'll get back with you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. As of this time, there are no questions. Thank you. Once again, participants, to ask a question, just press star followed by the number one and record your name. We have a question on queue coming from the line of Alejandro. Your line is now open.
Thank you again. Just a quick question. I am able to submit batch files of our registrations, but I am not able to download the results of those batch files. Is that something that the EDI help desk can also help out?
Yes, that sure is.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Susan Stevens. Your line is now open.
Hello. We're new to this DMH billing, so forgive me if I'm asking a silly question. But it seems like in order to register people, clients, we need to already have provided some service, at least an assessment, assess a person enough to provide a diagnosis. And I'm just wondering how that works. It sounds like we need to serve the client before we actually know whether the client will be approved for payment. Do I have that accurately?
Hi, this is Trish Gorda again. Unfortunately, we will need to get your number and give you a call back on that.
Okay, sure. Okay. 708-488-5559.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, there are no questions in queue. Once again, participants, to ask a question, just press star followed by the number one and record your name. Hello, Ms. Ricky. I would just like to inform you that Mr. Jones' line got disconnected now. So we're just waiting for him to dial back in.
Yes, I apologize, but it seems that all of the state lines have went down, so they will probably not be joining at this time. Do we have any further questions?
Right now, there are no further questions on queue.
Okay. Well, if there are no further questions in the queue, then that will conclude our call for today. I would like to remind the audience that today's call audio and presentation will be posted under the Provider Resources heading on the provider information page of the Collaborative's website. The audio will be in MP3 format and ready to download within 2 to 3 business days. I would also like to remind everyone that we value your feedback, so please take a few minutes to complete the brief survey that will appear when you close out the online forum today. And JR, please push the speakers through the post-conference, and you may now disconnect the main line.
Thank you. Participants, that concludes today's conference call. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.